They step into the biggest shows with the biggest names. And sometimes they get written on or off in a moment's notice. It's time to find out all the dramatic details of what it's like to be a guest star. With your host, Pete Ferrero.
Let's go.
There you go.
Hey, hey.
Hey, Pete, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you? Good to see you. Well, this is awesome. Larry Henkin, man, you've been around and working since the 60s, you know, I mean, you are, and the thing that amazes me about it is, it's like, you're one of those people that I think people know you from a thing, you know, like a bit, and it's a big thing, you know what I mean? Whether it's a sign
around, I don't know which thing it is, but you know, in the
60s. So here's the thing, like my sister and I, when we were younger, we watched, I watched all the shows that you were in the 70s, but I'm a 80s kid, so it's reruns for me, you know what I mean? But my sister and I know you probably from Annie. I think we watched Annie so many times, you know.
Really? That's incredible. I don't know. I watched something once or maybe twice. Maybe I'll watch a scene I'm in. But other than that, I'm amazed at how many times people watch things that I've been in, not because of me, but because of the movie, you know, like Trains, Planes, and Automobiles or Billy Madison. They're like, when I watched it 75 times.
Why? Yeah. Well, when I was a kid, I grew up in New Jersey and there wasn't much going on, but HBO was running movies like all the time. And I think Annie was one of those movies that they were just like, and we don't have anything else, Annie. And then, it's not what it is today. HBO, the Max, and the Go, and the, you know what I mean. But that's kind of
what I remember about that was John Huston. I don't remember Annie or my part even. I remember the audition and just hanging out with John Huston. I mean, that just was blowing my mind. So the fact that other people were watching it for other reasons, I don't understand that.
All right, let's go back though, because before you do Annie, you're in That Girl, right? I mean, so
yeah, wow.
I mean, is that where it kind of starts for you with
not that? Really. Where it started was I was working in the committee up in San Francisco. I'd been in. Wow. Can you tell that my nose is dirty over here? It's not dirt.
No, I can't tell
wearing
that.
Masks.
Oh, I see.
The K95 masks leave marks on your face. It's really weird.
Another thing to come from the pandemic.
Yeah, right. It's just.
Yeah.
You were talking about, what were you talking about, the movie?
Well, where it's kind of started from.
Oh, where it started, That Girl. No, I was working in the committee in San Francisco. I started up as a stand-up comedian, joined Second City. We split from Second City and started the committee, about six of us, you know, the director, a producer, and all had to do with Second City. We went to San Francisco. Well, that's only a plane flight away, an hour and a half, maybe, plane flight away from Hollywood. So, and it only cost back in the day, 70s, it only cost $35 round trip for a plane flight from Hollywood to SF and back. So they were calling us, they would fly up, see the show. It was as good as Second City, I think better, but yes. You know, see us, then they would fly back, call their, you know, casting people and say, hey, there's a tall guy up there, get him down. So I'd fly down. That's what That Girl was all about. You fly down, you do a week or a day, and then you fly back. So it was just a one-off. Mainly we were employed in the committee. But one time, and many people came up and did that and called and said, hey, the short guy, the fat guy, the funny guy.
Right.
Then Penny Marshall. One of the people who flew up and why she was doing Laverne and Shirley at the time. And she said, hey, we're doing a prom night. Laverne and Shirley go to their own prom. I want to dance with the tall guy. He's a funny guy in the committee. That was me.
Yeah.
So I flew down. I did that. And then I flew back And I auditioned, flew back. And then from that show, because of Penny Marshall getting me down, an agent saw the show. Actually, he just went to the production office. He said, that's how we work, his agency. That's how we work. We go to casting people and we say, not phone calls, they actually go there and say, hey, is anybody interesting that you just cast that
right.
doesn't have an agent? And somebody said, yeah, a guy named Larry Hankin, a tall guy, he went to the Laverne Shirley show. They really liked him a lot. He's funny. So he called me and said, you got an agent? No. You want one? Yeah. Okay, how about me? Fine.
Right.
Boom, the rest is history. So it's Laverne Shirley and Penny Marshall.
But that's the route that sort of like sends you, I mean, there's so much work and so many things that you do.
That's what started me off, because once I had an agent,
sure.
Then he started sending me to what turned out to be all these very popular shows.
Sure.
It's not my choice. That was him saying, go audition Escape from Alcatraz, which got me a co-starring role. But that was having an agent, you know.
Your Laverne and Shirley is awesome, but it is kind of controversial. You're hitting on Laverne.
So it was a prom dance. Laverne, Penny Marshall, is a very funny woman. I mean, she's a clown. She, you know, I'm going to say that.
She's incredible. Compliment. Yeah.
And she does, and she's a physical comedian. I mean, she can do pratfalls and stuff. So she wanted to rehearse. She likes to rehearse, so do I. So she said, during a lunch break, she said, look, there's nobody on the set. We can go rehearse, you know, because everybody's at lunch. So we were rehearsing, and at one point she said, well, why don't you just dip me and drop me? And I didn't want to do that, because I thought, man, if I drop you and you get hurt, it's on me, man. I'm going to get fired. So I was very hesitant about dropping her, even though she's, no, it's, I know how to fall. I don't. So while we're going through that, I said, well, how about this? How about if I dip you over the couch, so at least your head hits the couch, so at least I'm not worried about it.
And right.
Because I was worried about being fired. I didn't care about her.
Who cares about Penny Marshall?
I want the job. Yeah. So she said, okay. And so if I fall on the couch, if you dip me over on the couch, then you can fall on top of me. So I said, okay, fine. And then that works out. So we're doing that. And I dipped her, I dropped her on the couch, and I tripped and I fell on top of her. And all of a sudden I hear this voice, hey, what's going on here? And it was Gary Marshall, the producer, her older brother. And we get up and go, oh, we're just rehearsing the dance thing for the prom. And he right. said, what's this touchy-feely stuff going on? Touchy-feely? What are you talking about?
Right, yeah.
You know, on the couch thing, the touchy-feely. No touchy-feely here. No touchy-feely here. So she says, you know, he said, no, Gary, we're rehearsing a dance. He said, I don't care. So I said, look, we're dancing. We're touching. I mean, we're dancing. So we're touching already. I just dropped her on the couch. He said, I don't want any touchy feeling on the couch. You stand up. That's the touchy feeling. You stand up and you're dancing. That's it. Okay. No touchy feeling. So she just turned to me. Laverne turns to me. She said, he's my older brother. Well, no touchy-feely, fine. So I don't remember what we came up with. I don't remember.
Yeah, I mean it is touchy-feely.
Started that way, you know, where I was. That was my intent as an actor. You know, okay, yeah. I'm trying to hit on her. Okay,
right.
It was the kind of character that I had that would be okay, you know, that to do that. He was kind of a chauvinist, a male chauvinist. So I don't know, but that's how it ended up. And okay, so what I saw was, and what I remember of the scene is, we did whatever we were doing. I don't remember that. But my best friend, my buddy, outside of acting, he lives two blocks from me, was Peter Elbling, who was dancing with Shirley.
That's right. Okay. Yeah.
He was a short guy.
Yeah, I know. I remember.
He came in with Shirley on his shoulders. No touchy-feely. What was that all about? Well, she wasn't, you know, I'm not her older brother. I don't care what she does with him. Right. You know, it was just galled me when I watched the show.
Right.
How did she get up there, man? What do you mean, no touchy-feely?
But yeah, Michael McKean is in this. I mean, this is that year of like
Squiggly and
Squiggy and Lenny. What were those guys like?
Well, they were my friends. I mean, I knew them off screen. They were just friends, you know. I knew Michael McKean was a really good actor, and where he went with that, you know, on the lawyer show. You know, from Breaking Bad, the spinoff. So Michael McKean played the father in that, and he was this crazy, you know, moon.
Yeah.
You know, wearing weird hats and
right.
and tinfoil. So yeah, Michael McKean is doing okay. Played Broadway and stuff.
He was in the movie Clue. He's done a lot of things. You know, he's just a fantastic actor and work.
His arc was just from playing the Squiggy's partner to
that's right.
being a really cool actor. Or yeah, I guess he always was. And then Squiggy, who always remained a friend, and he just got sick, and so he kind of retired.
Yeah.
But I knew both. I mean, a lot of the beginning sitcoms, not in when I first started, I knew all the act because we auditioned together. Not together. I mean, we met at the audition.
I got you.
And I knew them all, and then. Once I got an agent and started going for bigger stuff, no, then I was just a stranger in a strange land. I mean, I just didn't know what the hell was going on. I didn't know anybody. And it's kind of weird for me. I have ADHD, I have dyslexia. So social interactions are really hard for me. It comes off as shy, but it's not shy. It's just, I don't know what's going on.
It's interesting too, because I've been talking to a bunch of people who have done so much guest star work, and you know, when you come into a new set, there's got to be some of the for you to come in. You're doing an episode of say Benson or Laverne and Shirley or whatever it is back in those days. You have to kind of like situate yourself and learn the world. You learn the universe. So as an actor, how do you do that? Is your shyness helpful in a way, or I know we're not calling it shyness, but is that helpful in a way because it gives you a chance to kind of learn the world? Or,
well, I mean, I'm smiling because you're touching on something that I haven't talked about. This is a new world, and the world changes very slowly as you become more well known. Yeah, but in the beginning, see, I come from Second City. And the committee, which is improv groups. I studied with Viola Spolin. She's like the Lee Strasberg of improv. I mean, I was directed by Paul Sills. So, the rule is don't deny. It's always yes and. Plus, you can enter and exit a scene at any time. There's no written script. There's no direction. They tell you afterwards, hey, you know, when you came in, you know, why don't you come in and have a prop? That's about the most of direction you can tell. But on the other side of it, as an actor, you can just put on a funny hat backstage and just walk into a scene, you know. Well, in movies, you need permission and written, you know, you got to go through. Can I change this word? Oh, Jesus, you know, we got to. Call upstairs and woo. It's just crazy. And then one day, you know, I said, can I change this word? Yeah, sure, do whatever you want. And I suddenly realized, oh, I got an upgrade, you know. All of it, you right. know, where'd that come from? Well, you know, I saw you and blah blah blah, you know what you're doing. So, and then very slowly you start to, and then you get a little freer, and so the social thing doesn't boggle my mind so much the more I did it. But in the beginning, you know, and so because of the dyslexia, I have to concentrate on remembering, like in auditions, I have to sit and concentrate to remember my lines because of the ADHD, my mind is always going. So my mind doesn't give a rat's ass what you're auditioning for, Larry. I want to think about, you know, what we're going to do when you get home, you know, are you going to paint or are you going to, so I have to sit quietly and everybody else is talking. I don't understand how actors can just blah, 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 and then go in and audition. I can't do that. I just got to, you know, circle, as they say, you know, get in.
Yeah, sure.
They call, well, I think maybe that's what, studio actors, where they
inside the actor studio, right?
Yeah, studio type of thing where they, you know, that's what it came off that I was, and it wasn't. I was just trying to remember my lines. I wasn't trying to get into my character. I was just trying to remember my lines. So it was kind of disconcerting in the beginning because everybody's talking it. But then I saw a documentary on Marlon Brando, and they showed us a slice, a little film cut of when he did that foreign film where he used a stick of butter. I don't know if you remember it.
I don't remember, yeah.
Well, anyway.
Yeah.
It was a stick of, the girl he was acting with was a new actress. Mm-hmm. This is Marlon Brando. So she said to him, and they were getting ready to go on in front of the camera. They were getting ready to go on. And so the director said, okay, you're up, let's go. And he just said, just a second, I'm talking to my co-star here. So they said, and then he just said, and you could see him, he signaled. He went like this as he's talking to her. And what he did was, and the director nodded and said, roll camera. But she didn't know that. So he goes, and he was talking to her and he said, well, she said she was nervous about doing the scene. So he said to her, no, don't be nervous. It's just like talking to me now. Just be real. And we're talking. And as he's talking to her about how to relax, he's kind of moving her, you know, with his hand towards the set. And then he's talking to her and he said, you know, it's just very casual, you know, just be real. There's no acting involved in it. And he just walked her onto the scene and he's saying, and then he just threw the first line and she just threw him the answer. And then they were just doing the scene and it just blew my mind. I thought, oh, that's, yeah. Whoa, what a lesson that was.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
Oh, that's how they do it, you know? So he's just trying to relax. It's not that internal bullshit that you...
Right, I got you. You do WKRP in Cincinnati, one of my favorite shows. Do you remember?
Wow, man, you know, all these old shows that I've been in, my God. I get the residuals from them, you know, like $6.43. I get residuals, you know, it's like really weird.
Right.
I used to save them. They don't do it anymore. But I used to get, in the beginning, I would do like a couple of Walt Disney things. And I would get a check like for 10 cents. And so I wouldn't cash them. I would just put them in my drawer and say, well, because the checks on Disney anyway, you know where it says pay to?
In yeah.
Name? Well, on a Disney check, I don't know if they still do it. I'm with for Disney for years, but on the old checks in the 70s and 80s, when they sent you a check for $1,000 or for 10 cents, I would get the 10 cents. I would get 2 cent checks for 2 cents. So on the pay to line, it was Mickey Mouse going, pay to, you know. Yeah.
That's great. That's really great. Yeah.
Pay to Larry Hagen,
right.
2 cents. So I, because of the little Mickey Mouse thing, I saved them just for that, just a little. So I had about like 10 or 15, you know, over the years, I just 2 cents, 10 cents, 12 cents. Okay. And then I heard that Disney wasn't sending out any more checks less than, and I don't know what it was, 50 cents or a dollar or $5. They just will not send it out. They'll either save it up and send, you know, when you get like $25, they'll send it in one check.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Why or why? Because nobody was cashing the 2 cents checks.
From Mickey. Yeah.
Or from Mickey. So yeah. That, you know, amounted to the, you know, to like hundreds and thousands of dollars of 2 cents and 10 cent checks all over the world. So they were losing a lot of money because they couldn't keep their books straight.
Right.
Which is weird, really weird. So they stopped doing that.
I mean, did you, so then you did a Family Ties, which I loved, you know what I mean? This is, you're in jail in Family Ties.
Yeah, yeah.
You
know, I loved you.
And they gave you a great line where they're like something about, were you arrested in the peace protest? And you're like, no, armed robbery or something. What's interesting about that time period, right, is like, there's so many networks now, there's so many streaming services, but if you did a Benson or a Family Ties or a WKRP, I mean, everybody was pretty much glued to the set for that show. So the exposure had to be incredible for you at that time.
Well, yes and no, but it's like vaccinations. You know, everybody knows about the show, but nobody had a TV set.
Right.
Vaccinated. But so, you know, it's, I was popular, but how many people were watching this popular show? In those days, if, you know, 25 people watched, it was a hit show. Now, in other words, I am more popular right now as I talk to you right this second. I am more popular than any other time in my life. And I haven't worked for 5 years. I have been off the grid for 5 years. It's not that I retired. I just like walked away. I just gave up my 5 years ago. I called my agent and I said, okay, that's it. I'm up to here. I can't take it anymore. It's not fun. It's just ruining. It's interrupting my day.
Going to do a show like this.
Yeah. My career is interrupting my day. I'm through. I want to paint. I want to do my own writing. I want to write a book. I want to write a screenplay. It's over. So I just walked away. I am now, you know what my, I don't know, you know IMDb, do you know the rating system? Up until a year, 2 years ago, before COVID hits, I guess COVID helped, but just about 3 years ago, I averaged 7,000, okay? And the best is number one. 1, 2, 3, 4, 100, 200, 1,000, 7,000. And most of the actors in Hollywood are about 200,000. That's the average.
Right.
If you're
okay.
200,000, you're a working actor.
Sure. Kind of
recognizable. Okay. Right now, today, I'm 1,000. That's amazing, man.
Yeah.
That's up there with stars who are
totally
capable. Well, I haven't worked in 5 years. And so you're talking about, you know, like Benson.
Sure.
It was a hit show. Maybe 1,000 people watched the show. Never mind 1,000 for me. That's like crazy. So I don't understand, you know.
It is interesting, though, because we are looking back and there's so much of this stuff now, podcasts and people wanting to ask about these old things. And I think that.
Well, let me interrupt for just a second. Podcasts are part of that 1,000 on the rating scale. In other words, I looked up, they also say like, you know, you go up and down like this. It's a graph. And,
sure.
if you shoot up, they put a little dot there and you know, you go down again. And then you can look at what made me shoot up. And I'd say 5 times out of 10, it's a podcast that made me shoot up.
That's amazing.
And another one is like Breaking Bad.
Of course.
The next one is podcast. Whoa, that's amazing.
I want to ask you about the two movies. I'm sure around this time of year, people are definitely want to talk to you about Home Alone, right? Because you did the Home Alone movie. And you also did Planes, Trains. Planes, Trains is,
the best. I love that movie.
And I love the scene that you do. He's proud of his town. You know? yeah. But so talk to me about those two movies. And I think Planes, Trains is first, obviously, and then Home Alone. But so walk me through
the two Hughes movies. I mean, they're both great.
Iconic.
They're both. One's Thanksgiving and one is Christmas. So I get two checks, residuals every Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Like, right around this time of year, right?
Yeah, I get two chairs. That's really cool. I mean, not a lot, but hundreds. You know, it's great, man. So, okay, so a home, a Trainspotting Zone is my favorite movie because of, I'll tell you exactly the scene where John Candy is driving.
Right.
That whole sequence going between the two trucks, between the shock, between Sid. But the best laugh I've ever had in a movie is, you know, the in Mel Brooks, the horse movie, The Fart. You know, that's a huge laugh in the movie.
Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, right, yeah.
When I watched it, it's related to Trains, Planes, and Automobiles. When I watched Blazing Saddles, I took a date, and it was an invitation. It had been out, but it was an invitation thing, and it was packed with a lot of stars and, you know, all kinds of carpets and stuff. But it was packed. And they're watching Blazing Saddles, and we were sitting kind of in the back, but in the middle. And here comes they're eating beans around the fireplace, campfire. And the movie is silent. We're watching it, you know, laughing along, but now we're watching it. Everybody knows what's coming up. And then all of a sudden, a kid in the middle, right in the middle, down front, but in the middle, stood up, you know, and he goes, "Here it comes!" And then, I mean, that was the biggest laugh I've ever been involved in. You know, it was great. Okay, so in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, when they're sitting on the trunk, they've crashed the car, it's behind them. And all of a sudden, just a whump, just a just behind
you.
You don't
see
the car, you don't see the flame, you just see a bright flash and a boom.
So amazing.
That the framing, in other words, John Hughes, you know, cartoons. Charlie Chaplin named it. He nailed it in his autobiography. He said, you know, how do you get your inspiration? Where does you movies and a little, he says, cartoons. I just frame for the cartoon. Well, if you draw cartoons, they're perfect, the drawing. And that's that woof in the back. That was a perfect, you know, framing for the joke, but not showing the joke. Just a woof. And also Blazing Saddles. It's a long shot. It's a master shot. I mean, those are the things that
exactly.
I watch for.
You and know. This is one of my favorite movies of all time, too. And then even their turn back reactions to the. So how did you get in that? What was the audition like for Planes, Trains, and then the follow up with Home Alone? And I mean, what's your day like on Planes, Trains?
Well, I'm trying to think at the time, I think I was beyond, well, I wasn't beyond, you're never beyond auditioning. Generally, they'd say talks. If you're a star, you have a talk, but basically it's an audition, you know. But
exactly.
I just want to talk to you. Okay, so I did that. At that point in my career, I think I was just invited. They knew my work.
So you didn't have to audition.
I didn't have to audition.
That's
for,
cool.
For John Hughes and for John Huston, for Annie. I came in, I didn't audition. I just came in and talked to John. A huge, great Homo sapien. I got to talk about him just for a second.
Please, man. Absolutely.
Because he did something that was just so endearing. I mean, a director, a huge icon like that, and he was endearing. My agent said, get down there right away. A lot of those times, get down there right away. It's John Huston. It's Annie. It's a big movie. When they say get down there right away, it's not a good thing for me to hear. Get down there right away. It means to me as an actor, it means somebody got fired and they're looking for a replacement. And my first thought is, why the fuck didn't they hire me in the first place and getting a replacement? I just get angry.
Of course, immediately. Without even knowing the story.
Right. Yeah, I don't care. You know, John Huston. Yeah, well, him. You know, So I go down there, and they were very courteous, you know, and he's good, cool. So you're waiting with a couple other people. So when you go in and get down there right away and you're the only one, that's a giveaway. It's somebody got fired and you got to do this tomorrow. But there was a lot of other people. So I calmed down. I thought, oh, he just was saying that. My agent was just saying that. Get down there right away. Okay. So since it was John Huston, it was a big deal casting agent, a woman. I won't even say her name because it doesn't go well for her in this story.
Okay.
she said, Larry, you're next. So I come in. So I walk in, and now he had been shooting. It was on a set. We were already on a soundstage. So watching. He's facing this way. He's watching his TV Village rushes. He's watching his rushes. He's into it. And, he turns around. He hears us walking in. Yeah, okay. And he knew my name right away. She said, so she goes behind me, and she puts her hand on my shoulders, and she steers me directly in front of him about, 10 feet away. And he goes, what are you doing? What are you doing? He's shouting at her. What are you doing? What are you doing? And she says, I'm just placing him in front of you so that you can make a judgment. Don't touch my actors. And that deep voice hit. Please do not touch my actors. And I thought, so she, took her hands off my shoulders like they were hot potatoes, oh, I'm sorry. And she, stood back, like a big girl next to me. Yeah.
Right.
Hands folded, And so he says, don't touch my ass. So, okay. So then he just talked to me. He says, Larry, do you know what the part is? It was the dog catcher. I said, yes, it's a dog catcher. So immediately when I said, yeah, it's a dog catcher. And it was very conversion. He was a very nice guy. Said, you know what the part is? I said, yes, the dog catcher. She immediately goes behind me, stepped behind me. She takes my hair. I was a hippie. My hair was down.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. So she takes my hair and she holds it up like this, but kind of away from her, like I'm not here. I'm not holding him.
I'm just touching his hair. I'm not holding.
Not even touching his hair. You don't see that.
Right.
You don't see that. I'm not doing like I was a cat in heat.
Exactly.
So he says, now what are you doing? Now what are you doing? He says, well, he's got to get a haircut, because he's the dog catcher. I was just holding his hair up. Please do not touch my actors. I am a director. I have an imagination. Don't touch them. So she now has been, admonished. I'm thinking, this guy is cool. I'm thinking, wow, man, don't touch me.
Exactly. Yeah. He's right. Don't touch me. Yeah. Moving forward, no one is to touch Larry Henkin moving forward.
Right. Hey, listen, man, I've had that. I was working with Lucille Ball and Yours, Mine, and Ours. And all I was doing is bagging their groceries. That was my whole part. Bagging the groceries. And when she came off stage, when they cut, all of a sudden four women gather around her and started doing her hair and her eye up and adjusting her costume. So she was hidden in there and she looks over them. They were short. They were foreigners and they were shorter than she was. And she says, you, sir, come over here. She was pointing at me. And I just done the scene bagging groceries. You come here. I come over and she says, young man, you're a very good actor, but if you get in my light once more, you're not going to be here tomorrow.
Oh my.
Just like that. And then she goes back in and they go.
And she becomes the.
Okay. Yeah. So it was like the same thing, only reversed with John Huston.
Sure.
It's weird what people on sets, I'm writing a book now about all that stuff. The weirdness of people in charge or not in charge. What goes on sets. So okay. So he stuck up for me. John Huston stuck up for me. I thought that was so cool. So now I revere the guy. Now I get on the set and I go into the costume room and I'm looking for my costume. And here's what I learned in all my years of being an actor is the first person you go to or who comes over to you when you show up is an AD, and they take you to your dressing room or tell you what's going on and where you are now in this hierarchy.
In the day, in the world of the set. Yeah, yeah. Set.
Okay,
right,
okay,
yeah.
They're shooting this scene now. You got 2 hours before you're going to shoot. Your costume is in your dressing room, and your dressing room is right here, and I'll take you there. And that goes on every, no matter what. That's what goes on. So I ask, I say, where is my costume? And they say, well, it's not in your dressing room yet. If your costume isn't in your dressing room, you can go and choose your costume because it's not there. So I go to the costume department,
right?
Going through the costume, looking, they have your choices on a rack so you can help choose and you know what you're gonna wear for the rest of the time you're in this movie. So I go in and the costume guy is there and says, what are you doing here? That's what everybody wants to know.
Right.
What are you? You know how many times I've been asked that in my life. What are you doing here?
On a set, I'm sure.
Yeah, on a set. Well, yeah. What are you doing? You know, if you're not next to the camera, they want to know what are you doing here. Unless they, you know you. You know.
Right. Sure.
So he goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, my costume isn't in my dressing room, so I'm here to help choose my costume, which is done all
very normal. Yeah, it's a normal thing to do, right?"
So he says, "I have your costume."
Okay, here we go. Okay,
you know, all right. Well, once they make the choice, it's over.
Right.
So, oh, okay, what is it? And he hands me this piece of cardboard. It sort of looked like a piece of cardboard. It was the coveralls for a tan dog catcher's uniform, like what mechanics in when you take the car in, the blue mm-hmm. coveralls. Well, it was tan. It's okay. But it was folded, washed, and starched into a square. Now, it just starts. So I said, I can't wear them because it's clean and it starched. I'm a dog catcher in the 1930s in lower Manhattan catching mongrels. It's got to be filthy. And I'm really adamant about my costume. That's where my character comes from.
You're right, though, in a way. You're right about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's what major actors have. I learned from major actors who I work with. That's
of course.
Teaching from. So anyway, he says, "You're not. What do you mean? You put this on. This is your. I'm not going to put that on. It's not dirty. If you don't put this on, we're going to have to go to see Mr. Houston." And I thought, suck for me. Right. Houston is mine. And I say, "Let's go. Yeah, let's go see Mr. Houston about this costume." Cool. He says, okay, fine. So now it rained the night before, but it was sunny out now. And Mr. Houston was now shooting. He was, you know, on the set, but it was outdoors. So there's puddles around, but you could walk in the dry thing. There's just puddles on the grass and stuff. Okay. So we're walking there, blah, blah, blah. And there's Mr. Houston. He's watching TV villains. You know, he watches like this all the time. So there he is again, watching his TV thing, just like at the audition. And he goes over and he turns around. He says, "Oh, George, all right, what's wrong?" He read right away. He read that. "Hi, George, what's going on? What's wrong?" "Hi, Larry." He remembered my name.
Knows exactly who you are.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Well, what's the matter? "Hi, Larry. What's going on, George?" And he says, "This actor will not wear this costume." "Is that true, Larry?" "Yeah. Why is that?" "Because it's not dirty. See, I'm a dog catcher. I'm catching mongrels. It's 1932. It's got to be filthy." "George, give me the costume." So he hands him this cardboard thing, and he gets up and he walks away. Now the first thing I notice is his white hair and his beard, his voice, and then his leather shoes. They're like Italian loafers, but very expensive. They have little gold thing on the I don't know. Very expensive. That's what I noticed.
Of course.
So he gets out of the chair and he starts walking away. And as he's walking away, he's opening it up. You know,
here we go. Right. Yeah.
and he walks into a puddle that's over his soles of his shoes. He just walks into the center of a puddle, big puddle in the grass. And he drops the
coveralls
into it, and he starts walking all over it under the water. He's walking, and both of us, our minds are blown. And then he picks it up with his two fingers. He holds it away from him, you know, so it's dripping. And he walks back and he hands it to George and says, George, I want you to take this costume, dry it out, and put it on this actor. Thank you, George. Thank you, Larry. And he goes back to his.
Wow.
Life. Now, the costume that I'm wearing in Annie is the costume John Huston stepped all over in the.
That's
puppet.
Amazing, man. That's perfect. Such, yeah.
It looked great. I said,
that's
great.
So cool. Yeah.
John Huston. One of the ones.
Yeah. It seems like he would be. That's an awesome story, man. I mean, and you're so great in that movie too, as the dog catcher. Did you said before, was that situation, did that help you become the dog catcher a little bit more?
No, you know, it's funny. I'm not an actor. I really am not. I never went to acting school. I just, improv is as close as I got to acting.
Sure.
It's totally different. The use of improv for improvisation is different than the improv for acting.
Of course.
So I just do my thing. I'm a one trick pony. I just put on the costume and I think I'm catching dogs now. And
that's
then
it.
I believe it.
Yeah.
That's all. That's my preparation. The hard part is remembering my lines because I'm a dyslexic. So all the energy that actors put into the character and the backstory, I put into just calming myself, my mind down to remember my lines. If I get my lines down, the rest is easy peasy.
For sure. The Home Alone one, the Christmas movie, was that, I mean, that's obviously now it's on and it's great and all that stuff. Do you remember doing that one? You're the cop in that one. You make the call and all.
Oh,
this.
No, that's a classic story, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm writing a book, so I'm telling you kind of stories out of the book.
I love it, man.
I'll tell you, this is, I truly believe this. That movie where the crumb falls on the phone.
Yes.
That crumb is more famous than I am.
I don't know.
When I go to like arena shows to sign autographs and stuff, or people stop me on the street.
Sure.
How did you do the crumb thing? Was that a CGI?
Oh, right. Of course. Yeah.
That's all they want to know. The crumb thing.
Yeah.
Well, how did you do the crumb thing?
How did you do the crumb thing? Yeah.
That was just a gift of the acting gods, you know. Right. That was
it just happened. Yeah.
Not only did it just happen, but I was doing that part as a favor. I was up for the part of the Daniel Stern's role. Daniel Stern was going to quit, so they called me to replace him. Why didn't you get me to no? Through all that, so they said. So then, and then he didn't quit. So they had to call me back and say, "No, he didn't quit. Forget it. His other parts, forget it." So I was like bummed for about an hour, and then that's show business.
Of course, that's
show business.
Yeah.
So I get a call about 2 weeks later. Now the movie is shooting. The whole that's all forgotten. Movie shooting. I get a call about 2 weeks later. From the producer, well, from my agent, but the producers just called. They want you in the movie. Okay, fine. They want me in the movie. Well, what? Said, well, here's the deal. They think that because they twisted you around, it was like they twisted me around for like a day.
With the Daniel Stern thing.
Daniel Stern isn't quitting. He is quitting. He isn't quitting. You're going to have to catch a plane tonight. You're not going to have to catch a plane tonight.
Right.
You know, pack your bags. No, just wait. All that was going on while they were negotiating with
Daniel Stern. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Daniel Stern. So they were jerking me around for about 10 hours. So 2 weeks later, they called me and said, we're sorry we did that to you, but we think we are reaping a dark harvest because of that. We believe, and this is crazy, but this is the phone call I got. From my agent who said the producer told him this. The movie is cursed. There's a kibosh on it. Because we jerked you around so much, we're having very bad luck on this movie.
Oh my God.
And they said, we have to have you in the movie now. I mean, and I thought this was nuts, man.
But it sounds nuts.
Fine.
Right.
Yeah. fine. So he says, but, here's the but. Now it's going to get dicey. But there's no parts available for you, except there's only, because it's cast and we can't fire somebody to hire somebody.
Sure.
It will come down on us. So there's only one part available and it's only five lines. And I said, great.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Sign me up. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this is, so it's only five lines. And I said, and I'm just listening. He said, now don't get crazy. I wasn't crazy. I was just thinking it's a paycheck. You know, I'm fine. So he said, now don't get crazy. Don't get angry. That's a small part. You know, you were up for, you know, they called you for a co-star.
Daniel Stern, right? Yeah.
So you have a right to be angry. But so they're willing to make a deal. Okay, what's the deal? The deal is they'll pick you up in a limo. They'll fly you first class to Chicago. They'll pick you up with a limo at the other end. Your set will be, your scene will be already set when the limo arrives from your plane. So you don't have to wait. Your costume will be ready, and we'll pay you $10,000, you know, cash, you know, a check.
No, fantastic.
Taken out.
Right.
I said, oh, fuck yeah, man.
Let's do it. Let's do it, right.
Yeah, that's great.
Exactly.
And we'll have you home for dinner.
Perfect.
Dinner in your own home. I said, no, for $10,000?
Let's do it, right. Yeah.
Let's do this, baby. So, okay, I get, oh, I hung up. Great, wow, I'm thinking, wow, man, cool. And then I get a call back from a producer. So he said, we're very happy to have you aboard. I know this sounds crazy, but really, Larry, you are doing us a favor by being in this movie. I thought, well, thank you very much. You're doing
nice, very nice comment, right.
Okay, he said, but now we have one other thing we'd like to ask you. Do you want any props, anything? I mean, you're doing us a favor, so whatever you want. You want a costume prop, you want a prop, a hammer, whatever. You know, you tell us, what do you want? And we'll give it to you. We'll have it there for you. So I said, well, okay, I want to be eating a donut. So he said, okay, a glazed donut. I want a glazed donut. You just want a donut? Yeah. Just one. I mean, I
whatever. Right.
The whole thing was getting stupider and stupider to me at the time. I mean, the $10,000 was great and all the rest was, I don't care. Give me the money, I'll be home for dinner. That's what I saw. Now, this is a fucking donut? Come on, man. Donut. Okay. Fine. Leave me alone already.
Amazing.
Okay. So the day comes. Sure enough, a white stretch limo pulls up in front of my apartment house. So now I look out, and I have a window down. I live on the front. So I look down, there's a white stretch limo down there. And I see people walking by, they're starting to gather now. Who's gonna get in the limo? So I got like about seven people.
Right.
Oh, wow, man, this is, who's gonna be, you know? And then I come out and get in and they're like, what the fuck? I'm late for my appointment to get my, you know, Slurpee,
and it's you. And right.
This is who comes out. I don't even know this guy. Oh, I think I saw him on something. Hey, what's your name?
Oh man!
So I get on that thing. I show up, and sure enough, so I go and I go and I and just like they say, you know, limo there. They're waiting for me. The set is all set up, and I go. Just to, you know, like,
sure.
You know, hey, where's my donut?
Right.
And he goes, the producers now are there to greet me. There's three producers, and the Christopher Columbus was the.
Sure, that's right. The director.
And they're there waiting for me. I mean, this to them is a serious big deal that the movie is cursed. That's what this is all about. And to me, I'm just an actor replacing somebody or.
Taking the part, whatever you're doing.
Yeah. So I can't get behind their joy and their intensity.
Right.
Confusing. So where's my donut? Yeah. So I see this intensity. Oh, thank you, Larry. Thank you for doing this. And I'm going, where's my donut? Okay, bring it in. And what they do is they roll in a baker's rolling tray. You know, those trays with have all these.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Roll it in. And on it is full of glazed donuts. I did the math. There's over 300 donut glazed donuts on this tray. And they say, here's your glazed donut. Choose the one you want. And I'm, and I, this is like stupid. So I'm going, oh man, hey, Chris, ridiculous, man. I only need one. You know, I asked for one glazed donut.
Not 300, right?
Not 300. And he goes, hey, Larry, we may have to do another take.
Fair point. Oh, okay. Fair point.
I get it. Okay. So now we start to do the movie, you know, my scene. Because they go, all right, get in there. Boom. Okay, ready. Everything's ready. Fine. Okay, rolling. Action. Get about halfway through the scene. I cut, 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 cut. So I've eaten half a donut. Okay. So Chris says, yeah, see, we're going to have to do another take. The camera went off the dolly. Okay. All right. Let's do it again. Okay. I did that scene 10 times. I've never done a scene 10 times. As somebody else said, it was, I don't know, some director who does a lot of takes.
Sure. I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. The famous director. Mm-hmm. And they were all technical difficulties. At one time, because of the heat, we were on a small sound stage and they had movie lights. And one of the movie lights above us heated up so much it exploded.
Oh my God.
Rained down glass.
Maybe it was cursed.
No, that's what I'm telling yeah. you. On the 10th take, you could see the white faces of the producers, and I start to think, holy shit, this is cursed.
Right.
This is not a joke. And
I mean, when would you see a light explode on set like this?
On a set like that, right. So we had to shut down while they swept up the whole.
Yeah.
So that's losing money. And then the camera thing, the camera was out of focus, something fell, somebody laughed. It just got so, and they're using donuts, and I'm eating like 10 donuts,
right?
And you know, and I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, man, and I'm gonna have to sleep overnight here.
There's no going right home. That's gone. Right?
Yeah, that's gone. Because I was thinking, that's a great story that they flew me in, and I'm eating dinner in my own house.
Right, that's gone.
Crazy. Yeah. That is so cool. That's a cool story. So yeah, they're interrupting that, and then on the 11th take, you know, and I don't even want to eat another glazed donut. But okay, so on the 11th take, I'm eating the donut, you know, and then now for the first time in 10 takes on the 11th take, the scene goes all the way through, and I hear cut, moving on, and then all of a sudden the entire crew and everybody watching goes, and they break out laughing, like, you know, when they hold it in because it's a take until somebody yells cut and then they let it out. That's what happened. Everybody fell down laughing. And I go, oh, shit.
Yeah.
So Chris Columbus said, come here. I want to show you something. I said, I don't want to see my fuck up.
Right.
Let's do it again, man. Right. I'm getting angry. I really had an attitude now about how many times do I have to fucking do this for my $10,000? This I'm
right.
trying to earn my money now.
Exactly.
That's bullshit. Right. So he says, no, I want you to see this. I said, I don't want to see my screw up. I just want to do it again. Because I was afraid I would forget my lines.
Of course.
That's what I worry about. But he says, no, I just please come over and watch it. So I go and watch it. Well, as soon as he started queuing it up, to watch it in the TV village, the crew came over to watch it again. So we're watching, and then I got, and they go, da, 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 boom. And then the crew, just as soon as it dropped down, and I don't know, because I'm looking, it's down here, I'm looking out that way.
Right.
So my non-registering is also making it funny.
Right.
Yeah, Krumkoff doesn't know what's going on.
Right, yeah.
So they're all laughing at me, at the thing, you know. So I see this, I hear them laughing, and before it comes to the end of the scene, and he turns it up, and I say, okay, ha-ha, very funny. Let's just do it again so I can go home.
Right.
He said, go home? He says, that's going in the movie, man. He says,
oh, that's amazing.
Gold.
Yeah.
I say, are you kidding? He said, yeah, that's funny.
It is funny.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's funny. I've watched it, you know, with time gone by.
Yes, you're past this.
And I want to get home and eat my dinner so I can tell the story about how I got $10,000
right.
to fly in and fly out. That was my actor story that they were just fucking with. So,
great, man.
Yeah, it's just... It's a great story. Anyway,
I want to ask you. You're writing this book, right? This is going to be really awesome, man. How's that going? Is it fun to?
Well, I just finished it about 3 days ago, and now I just got it proofread. It just came back, so I'm going through that. But everybody likes it. They think it's kind of the stories that I've just been telling you. I've been telling pieces of the stories.
Sure, of course.
It's still fresh in my mind. I've been writing it for like 7 months or something like that. Just every day, you know. Here's something about acting that you don't know, that I didn't know ever. You know, there's certain schools, you know, the method acting, that's what I was talking about, method.
Yeah, for sure.
Blah, 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 blah. There is no such thing as any school. What you do is you go to an acting school, any acting school, just to get practice of talking to other people with memorized lines. That's it. Because when you start acting with real actors is just, I'm an actor. You say that and that's it. There's no degree.
Right, right. It's right. You know, like, you're not like, it's not med school or law school where you need to know all this shit. It's, this is it.
I'm an artist. Okay, right. I'm an artist. I'm a poet. Okay, you're a poet, you know.
Yeah.
You know, your poetry stinks. Yeah, but I'm a poet.
Right.
I like bad poetry, but I'm a poet. Okay, so, all right. But, so when I act with, you know, like Bryan Cranston, you know, Bill Hader, or, you know, whatever, each one of those stars who are great actors have worked it out in their own way. So they may have started with method because that's the school that was down the block, or they had enough money to go to method acting, or Lee Strasberg, or whatever, or Uta Hagen, or any acting school in LA.
Sure.
But once you get on the set, it's survival, man. You know, you don't have a crew and a Panaflex camera that's about that big, you know, staring you in the face, and some budget guy and an accountant and producers. That's not in acting school.
Exactly.
Mm. But that's what you have to deal with when you're an actor. It's time and memorizing lines and lights blowing up and people, you know, lunch break. And do you eat before you act or after you act? And
making the day, making the schedule, all of that stuff.
All of that is part of acting, and you got to shut that out. In acting, they clear that away for you. You're just here with your acting mate and a teacher and 15 people in your class who's got to shut up and watch you do your thing. When you're on a set, man, it's chaos. Mm. It's chaos. And then all of a sudden, for your time on in front of a camera, all of a sudden it gets very quiet and still, where, quote, the magic is going to happen.
Right.
And you got to make it happen. Mm. You're the magic. You're the magician. So the yes and is, so you got to work it out yourself and just learn when you get there.
Yeah.
Just learn when you get there. That's my school is the 40 years of acting on set. I never went to an acting school.
Mm.
And so that's what I learned. And the same thing with writing, reading.
Yeah.
Every novelist has a different trick that they know about writing.
Sure.
I've gotten three people now telling me how to do it.
Yeah.
Now that I've done it, they now are reading it and saying, well, but you don't do this. Don't call him that. Say this.
Yeah.
Or mean him that. Or don't put that in front of this. Change it around.
Learning the structure, sort of. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The structure. Yeah.
Yeah, structure. Well, I guess even in your acting, it's all structure.
Structure.
How you...
What about Seinfeld? I want to ask you about that too before we wrap up here. But going into that, I heard somewhere that you're friendly with Michael Richards. How did you get the
Michael Richards suggested me, because we auditioned for a lot of things before either Michael Richards or I were a twinkle in anybody's eye. I mean, you know, we just, and one time we worked together as brothers, as a matter of fact, in a restaurant sitcom years and years and years before Seinfeld. So he suggested me. So that's how I got the audition. But when I auditioned, there was like, nobody looked like him. I thought it was a lock. I mean, I played him as a brother. I played his brother. So I thought, I got this. And I had to audition 5 times. And the top thing is 3 times, then you're supposed to get paid if you have to audition more. They never even mentioned that. I never got paid. And everybody was always different. In other words, they weren't auditioning a lot of people who looked like Michael. I was the only one. There were short people, fat people, bald people, bearded people. You know, and I was getting angry and angry, a little attitude problem that I had. But, you know, keeping coming back and seeing the same people doing the same, auditioning for the same people. And there was always this bald guy who just said, go out and come in and like Kramer. Go out the door and come in like Kramer. And I don't know who he was. I knew there was a Seinfeld was there. Jerry was there. There was a producer, a guy in a suit. I knew that. There was a director, and he was just a slob. Directors in auditions are generally the worst dressed people.
Right. And that's my director, right?
Casual. extra casual, ultra casual. And then there was Costanza, you know, whatever that guy. This bald guy kept on telling me the 5 times, every time. They'd say, well, is that it? You know, thank you very much, Larry. And then as I'd go out, this bald guy would go, hey, wait, go in and come in. I like Kramer again. Now, here's the thing. You're sitting out in the waiting room with other actors, and then the door opens, you know, Larry Hankin or, you know, Bob, you're next.
Sure.
Or they peek around the door, you know, hey, come on in. So they peeked around the door. They said, Larry, come on in. Okay. But when you're sitting around there, you know, other people go in, come out and leave. Go in, audition, come out and leave. I never saw anybody go in, come out and go back in like Kramer. I never saw that. You know, 5 times I'm there. You know how many people I saw go in and audition before I got in there?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now I go in, then I go out and come in like Kramer. So I'm going out, they're thinking I'm coming out to leave. You know,
All the other people auditioning, you mean? Right, I got
it. So they're watching me go in and come out, and it's the same people saying, he did that last time. I didn't do that. Mm. So, I mean, well, it's driving us all nuts.
It's mind-boggling,
so,
right?
Yeah, so I said, on the 5th time, the guy says the same thing, that bald guy. He goes, go out and come in like Kramer. So I go, okay. And then going in to do the audition, I said, if that bald guy in there tells me to go out and come in like Kramer, I'm going to rip him another asshole. I mean, I'm just going to lose it. I don't care. See, that was the thing. I had to protect myself. Mm-hmm. I didn't care.
Right.
So I had a little more leeway than other actors. I didn't have any children. I didn't have a car.
And you've been working, man. So it's like, it's not like you don't work.
Yeah,
you
know what I mean? Yeah, but... I just didn't. So that's when I went into the audition. And then he says, go out and come in like Kramer. I said, okay. When I'm going out. And when I come in, I'm going to lose it. Voluntarily. So I go out and there was a secretary who's there in the room. So I shut the door. And I just said to her, I never did this before. And I said to her, who the fuck is that guy in there who keeps telling me to come out and come in like Kramer? And she said, oh, that's Larry David. He owns the show. He writes it. Oh, thank God. Okay. I was just like a kindergarten child, you know?
Right. You got it together. Yeah.
But that was the last. Thank God. You know, she could have gone to the bathroom, and if I didn't ask that question.
Oh, you were going to come in like wildfire.
In. Yeah. Now, I did it and I paid the price for it years later. You know, when Curb Your Enthusiasm, I got an audition for that.
Oh, did
so
you?
It's a lock, man.
Yeah.
I mean, me doing Kramer is kind of a famous little thing. So I thought, well, he knows I'm good, you know, so that's cool. So as I go into the room to audition for
Larry.
Larry David show, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Curb.
Right.
I went for the audition for Curb. What's his name? Garn.
Jeff. Yeah, Jeff Garland.
Jeff Garland. Yeah. Who had used me years and years before I became an actor in something that he was doing before he became an actor. And he said, one day I'm going to become an actor and I'm going to use you. And now, 15, 20, 30 years later,
here you are in the room. Garland
comes out of the Curb Your Enthusiasm audition room. I'm in the hallway auditioning and he's waiting for me. Jeff Garland comes out and he said, hey, Larry, thanks for coming. I told them about you. I told Larry to get you in, you know, because of what you did for Seinfeld. So, yeah. So, okay. And then he goes back in and he sits down next to Larry. And so I come in now and he says, okay. And they give you little pieces of paper. It's an improv audition. It just says what your intent is. So on my little piece of paper, I had, you're getting off an elevator and Larry David is trying to get on the elevator. They do that dance. That's it. You know, like, oh, excuse me.
Right.
Okay, fine. So it's an improv. There's a, you know, a mime elevator. There's no elevator. It's just in front. It's like in a classroom. It's a classroom. So all this, there's about 100 people, no, about 50 people sitting in the children's desks. It's a classroom.
Right.
And Larry David and Jeff and the producers are sitting in the front row. And everybody else came in to see the, because, you know, now he's a genius. Now
he's a genius.
So now everybody's, you know, watching the audition. So I come in, I have my little piece of paper. So there's a guy, a sign says, okay, this is the elevator. He draws an air elevator. He says, okay. And they had two or three people in the elevator with me, standing behind me. And I'm standing here, okay, this is the door. And here's the door. And the doors are going to open. And then Larry gets on the other side. He's facing me. And he says, okay, here's the door. And the guy stands on the side. And he says, okay. And the doors open, scene. And Larry and I are doing this, you know. And I won't stop. I won't let him on the elevator. Just going like this. And he's just like his ego is involved. Mm. And now he's finally, okay, stop. All right, that's enough. All right, okay, thank you. And he's yelling that. Oh, thank you. Okay, stop. Okay, thank you. All right, next. Let's get the next person in. He wouldn't even look at me. The next person. And I said, and somebody says, okay, thank you very much. And they try to get me out of there. You know, right. The genius is disturbed. oh my god, and so they usher me out. Two people ushered me out. It's okay, and they ushered me out. So I'm in the hallway now going to my car. Okay, I guess I blew that audition. I don't know.
Right, that's that.
I'm in my car, and Jeff Garland comes running out. What did you do? I was doing that dance. That's what I was doing. No, you were fighting with him. No, I wasn't. I was doing the dance, man.
Right. Yeah.
He says, no, you were fighting. I said, no, I wouldn't let him on, man. I was just playing. It's an improv. And he goes, no. Oh my God. I suggested you. Oh my God. And he starts to walk back and disappeared into
it. Oh my God.
Oh my God. So, I mean, show business, you know,
yeah, I'm not an
actor, man. Don't fuck with me. I don't play that game.
But you've been doing improv for so long too. I mean,
10 years easy.
You know, so you could have adjusted any of that. You know what I mean? If he just took 2 seconds to talk. No,
he thought he was a genius.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
No, I admit he is a genius.
Of course.
Thinking you're a genius is a whole other ball game, man. Right. Fuck you.
Exactly.
Come That's on. Great,
this has been great chatting with you. I want to. People will be mad if I don't ask you about Friends and doing all that. I mean, that became something pretty popular. Playing that character on Friends. Is that now where you think you get most recognized from, is the Mr. Heckles? Yeah.
By far. Well, it's a worldwide phenomenon. Now, most of the things that we've talked about have gone worldwide.
Sure.
Viral.
They're huge.
But Friends is just a solid. That's it, man. It's a solid. And around the world. It's amazing. I get the calls. Well, they do the cameo thing. Yeah. So I get cameo things from Taiwan, India. Mr. Heckles is huge in India. I have no idea why or how they understand English, the translation or whatever. No, yeah, but I get these cameo things from all over the world. India is really interesting because I never got along with the people on Friends. Yeah, the stars. They kept to themselves. What I saw about Friends, because I was on Friends for five times, is I was on before it went on the air. My first audition and the show was before they were banking six. They just made six shows and they were going to put the best one on the air first and then put them on.
Sure.
My show was the second or third. I asked, they said, well, when would my show? Well, we think it's going to be third. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But so I saw them when we were all the stars of the show and me. We were all just new people, unknown.
New show. Nobody knows anybody. Nobody
was famous. I never knew.
Jennifer Aniston, any of them. Right.
They were just young people. Boom. Okay. And then the second show I did, and then the third. But then the fourth show I did in the second year. And the fifth show I did in the third year. So in the second year, they were buying the houses. And the late first year and the early second year, they were buying houses and became, you know, top 10. But now in the third year, which was my last year I did it, the third year, they were United States stars, or at least
icons.
Hemisphere stars.
Yeah.
So I saw three different iterations of personality changes, which was amazing. And I guess everybody goes through it because, you know, at first they're nobody. We're all in this together. Then, hey, well, you know, we got picked up. We got picked up as a yay. Okay, you're feeling a little better. Okay, now they're on and they're in the top 10. You see, their rehearsal clothes are a little better. They're a little shinier, a little more hip hop, you know?
Yeah, right.
And then the fourth show, they're buying houses and talking about closure. And closing costs. And
great, all that stuff, house terms.
All that stuff. And then by the third year, there were paving driveways and getting gates in. and their personalities and waistbands were, marging with their fame,
right?
in their bank accounts, you know, pudgy around the cheeks and stuff. And yeah, it was just, weird. And their distance, you know, each time they cut and they would huddle up together and you couldn't get in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know them, I just know my part, you know, and why did you give me a heart attack? I had five, you know, six, I would get paid more.
It's interesting, man. When you see that though, like as a guest star or whatever, your part is very, it's very important to that show. I mean, it's what you delivered.
It pisses me off because it was done for a stupid reason. And I'm not a nice guy. I mean,
you seem very nice today.
I just do what I want to do. I mean, I don't like pretense. I can't, you know, I have dyslexia, so I there's a lot of social graces that I miss or misinterpret. You know, do you shake hands or say hello? Do we hug? Do we
touch
anything? Do I sit down? Do I honor you? Are you known as a genius? How should I relate to you? I can't go through. I mean, we're people and that's it. So I don't make friends easily. Mm. And on sets, Hollywood is very social. Hollywood is like your parents or like you're a guest at somebody else's house. You're always no negative thinking. There's no negativity on the set. Now it pays off because I've produced and directed my own shows with my own my own film shows, and it's true, man. You don't need negativity, and you like people to show up. So I understand. It's just when you lay it on me, and I'm just here to help you out, and all of a sudden, you know, the guy, you're putting this on. We're going to see Mr. Houston. I mean, that crap.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Not the other stuff, which is just human nature. I mean, sure. We're all human beings. But that kind of, we're going to see Mr. Houston. Okay. John Houston, you know, showed the guy, you know, how to be a human being. You know, give me that, you know.
Here, exactly.
Wash it, you know, dry it off and put it on. You know, stop with the,
So, yeah, some people, they own their position so hard in the film world. You know what I mean? Like, he's the costume guy, and that's it. Nothing else, right? You know.
Well, you know, it's like vaccinations, like politicians.
Right.
They have mortgages. I understand it a little. They have mortgages and they have children, and I don't want to lose this job.
Exactly.
That's what George was all about. You know, he's trying to protect his position. You know, if you go on with the wrong costume and John Houston fires him, I understand it.
Yes.
You know, right. John Houston is not here. We can work it out right here at the table. That's what I do with all my things. You know, you go in the costume, they love that.
Of course. You
know, when I did, I was playing a Hell's Angel and I went into the costume rack, you know, and I'm there. And then the costume lady came over and she said, oh, you know, are you the Hell's Angel? Yeah, just looking at stuff. And we went through it together. And, you know, I put it on. Oh, that looks good. And that's great. And then I put it on. We picked it out. She took a picture, sent it to the director. So she sent the director the picture. And then it came back. And she says to me, hey, he loved it. And she's happy for both of us. We both picked it out. And, you know, it's that kind of making movies.
Yeah, exactly.
Not you're putting this on and we're going to the principal.
Exactly. That's exactly what it's like. Listen, man, this has been great chatting with you. You've done so much great work, and just thank you for your time here. I love everything.
Thank you. You're a great interviewer. You know?
I love everything that you've done, man. Thank you for the work that you've done and being a part of so many of our childhoods and teenage years and adult years. It's just.
Well, can I? Awesome. Okay, I got a commercial. Okay. Yeah. TheRealLarryHankin.com. Okay. I'm also a painter, so these are my two things. There's 40 of my paintings. They're, you know, 3x4, 5x7, whatever, 2x3. Or you can get them on T-shirts for like, you know, $13, $10.
Oh, man. TheRealLarryHankin.com.
TheRealLarryHankin.com. Plus my film shorts are on there, too. And my book is coming out. Oh, and you can also get my book. I have a book called The Loopholes Dossier. It's a book.
Oh, very cool. And also, and if you want to get them, you know, get them to do a cameo too. You're on Cameo. And
then, I'm on Cameo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Happy birthday. Happy
all that shit. Right?
Day,
yeah.
Happy holidays.
If you want them to yell at somebody and
but don't write a script. I have to improvise it.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, man. Thanks so much for this. This was awesome. Let's stay in touch. All right.
When the book comes out, we can do it again.
Oh, that would be awesome, man. I would love it. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. All right.
Very cool, my man.